Just so we're clear on record, it's okay if I record this, right?
Yes, you're welcome to record anything I say.
Okay, thank you. So I have to ask, why the secrecy?
There's an unspoken rule at San Montane Lodge. Don't rock the boat, which is what you and I are doing right now.
After my visit to San Montane Lodge, I received a mysterious note telling me to meet someone at the Cup and Saucer Cafe in town. The note was signed E. When I walked into the busy cafe, it wasn't long before I spotted him. Ethan San Montane. He was seated at a booth in the far corner with a cup of coffee in front of him. Steam from the cup was fogging the lenses of his gold-rimmed, circular glasses. When he spotted me, he nodded. I was there to see him. My name is Mara Safi, and you're listening to Untold, the story of Crimson Hill.
What was it that you wanted to tell me?
Where would you like to start?
I guess we can start with the Wiedekind family. What do you know about Jane Wiedekind and her three children?
What your grandfather said about maintaining a legacy, it applies to them more than the rest of us, I think.
What do you mean?
Wiedekind legacy is one of power and magic.
Magic? Is this some sort of joke?
What is that you said? Temperature in a room would suddenly drop when they entered? It's been there, Mara, and I think you've sensed it too.
I don't understand. What does that have to do with a magical legacy?
I'm going to tell you something, and I just need you to listen and save your questions for the end, because from the outside, I know how it sounds.
Okay, go on.
This all goes way back to even before any of us existed. The mechanics of it aren't clear, but what I do know is that it has to do with a family grimoire. I assume Klaus and Angelica brought it with them from Germany when they came to Virginia. It passed down from generation to generation, and while everyone in the Wiedekind blood was born with abilities, the keepers of the grimoire were given access to even more spells and rituals that helped them maintain power over the family. The trifectum, a healer, a telepath, and a telekinetic. The current trifectum is made of the three matriarchs of the Wiedekind family. They're as old as sin, and one of them, Elizabeth Wiedekind, the first, is on her deathbed. Any day now, she is going to die, and it will leave a power vacuum in the family. Jane has been planning this day for years, but ever since her niece Liza ran away from Crimson Hill, she's missing a healer. Jane needs a Wiedekind healer to claim the grimoire and forge her mark on the family legacy.
Understandably, it was a lot to process. When I set out to investigate the strange and unexplainable circumstances surrounding the Wiedekinds, I was not expecting a story of spellbooks and a magical power vacuum. Ethan then told me that Jane Wiedekind was a dangerously powerful telepath, that she was not only able to read minds, but enter them. Manipulate them. And that seemed in line with what I've heard about her so far. Ethan told me about her sons, Grayson and Damon, capable of telepathy but nowhere near as powerful as their mother. But it was when he told me about Edith, Jane's daughter, when the hairs on the back of my neck stood straight up.
Edith hasn't been right for a long time. I knew her when we were kids, and she's always been sort of spiteful and jealous. She was a telekinetic, and she could make things happen without lifting a finger. But when her father left the family, something happened to her. She was the only one who took his last name, Edith Axel. She stopped talking, but started practicing really scary telekinesis. She started torturing her cousin Liza. Somehow, she figured out how to move bones and veins. Liza would wake up in the middle of the night with broken ribs. She was a healer, so it wouldn't be long before they'd mended, but the unpredictable sudden pain was too much. That's why Liza ran away.
I'm sorry, that's awful. It sounds like you and Liza were close.
Even nodded and told me that to escape her treacherous family, Liza would spend a lot of time with him at San Montane Lodge. Without Liza, the last surviving healer, after Elizabeth died, there was no way that Jane could claim ownership of the grimoire. Which was a big deal, according to Ethan. He told me that without a trifectum to keep the grimoire, the powers of the surviving Vedekins would fade over time, and the future bloodline wouldn't inherit any abilities. It was a desperate matter for a family obsessed with legacy.
So it sounds like it's all about to end.
Well...
You don't think so? Will Liza come back? Join forces with Jane?
No, she'd rather die. But there is something else.
Something else?
Liza's mother, while she was alive, had a son from one of her many affairs. Because of her Vedekin lineage, he was born with telekinetic powers. From what I've heard, he's quite the talent.
So he's a telekinetic. Liza is a healer. And you...
He had told me himself. Everyone born with Vedekin blood had abilities. I had a copy of a family tree that confirmed that he was just that. Vedekin blood. And then I heard him again, in my head. He said, "Have you figured it out?"
You're forming a new trifectum.
That was the end of my conversation with Ethan San Montane. He left the cafe first, instructing me to wait a few minutes before making my way out. I was still processing what he'd said and what I'd figured out. I didn't even know if I believed all of it. Yes, I could hear Ethan say stuff in my head, but a centuries-old grimoire and the race against time to form, what was it, a trifectum? This stuff was all way beyond my pay grade. And what about Ellie and the missing girl she had mentioned? Why could no one tell me anything about that? I had tried at one point to ask Ethan about Ellie, but he could only tell me that she had been an employee of the family's and had recently resigned on her own terms. And the thing is, I believed him. But for peace of mind, I still wanted to know if she was okay after reaching out to me. All these thoughts and more were racing in my head as I counted the minutes in the cafe. Then I got up and left, making sure that no one had their eyes on me. I had gotten paranoid, too. It was already dark when I stepped outside, and suddenly it sunk in that I was by myself in a new town where I knew almost no one. Desperate for a familiar voice, I took out my phone to call my sister, check in with everything back home. But before I could, I saw that an unknown number had called me not once, but twice. And not only that, but they had left me a voicemail. My first instinct was that Ellie was finally calling me back. I cursed myself for not feeling my phone vibrate when she had called. So I played the message back, and this is what I heard.
Hi, Mara. My name is Liza. I don't know how much the Carmichaels have told you, but I have a feeling you know who I am. I've been listening to your podcast. I know you're looking into my family, and trust me, I do think it's high time their atrocities come to light. But you need to be careful. The open secret of the founding families, mine in particular, is not just a fact of this community. It's an intrinsic part of it. Trust no one, except Ethan. Watch your back. If you're going to be digging deeper, you'll find out that more than one girl has gone missing in Crimson Hill, and I have an idea of who's behind it. I'll be back in town in a couple of days, and I can help you. But for your safety, should you run into my Aunt Jane or my cousins, run. I'll see you soon.
Liza Vedekind, the runaway healer. The identity of my missed caller alone was enough to surprise me. There were girls going missing in Crimson Hill. Now that was way above my pay grade. But everyone in this town seemed to be afraid of the Vedekins. Something told me that the local authorities might not be so keen to investigate their connection to the disappearing girls. And if they are responsible, my question is why? What did that have to do with the story that Ethan had just told me? It seemed like the more questions I try to answer, the more questions I get in return. What did Liza mean by saying that she was going to help me? Did she want to work together to uncover what happened to Ellie and the other girls? Before Liza got here, I knew that I needed to get my handle on what the hell was happening. I had to find out who the other missing girls were. You might be thinking, Mara, what does this have to do with your personal mission to finish your grandfather's town biography? Well, after I got back to my room at the bed and breakfast, I flipped through some of his old papers until I found a chapter that he had dedicated to the Vedicants. You know me, I like background. But whatever I was expecting, it wasn't this. Chapter 11, The Eclipse. Recovered from the journal of one Miss Alexandria Sweets shortly before she met her violent and early death. Dear Journal, Mother forbade me from seeing William, but I've been sneaking away to meet him anyway. Lately, I've been afraid of going to the house, so I make him meet me at the abandoned cottage in the briar between our estates. I won't forget the day I was waiting for him in the parlor of the mansion, when I heard the screams coming from a distant wing of the house. When William finally came downstairs to meet me, his face was as white as snow. He sounded scared when he spoke. Since then, we've been meeting in the briar. Last night he told me something I can't stop thinking about. I shouldn't be writing about this. If it were found, terrible things could happen. I know I've been sworn to secrecy, but it's not like I'm telling Mother or Charles. William was shaking when he told me that his father and Aunt Eleanor were desperate to complete a task before the eclipse. That they had something to do with all the girls that have been going missing from down in the village. According to him, there is a book that gets passed down the family, and in the book are instructions to do terrible things. And William assures me that these instructions have to be followed. If they're not, his entire family will suffer in some way. He has told me a lot of things about his family. He even showed me his gift. He can heal himself and others. He calls it a curse, but I can't understand how it could be anything other than a gift from God. Last night he told me that the gifts are rewards for following the instructions of the book. I asked him if he worshipped the book, and he started crying. I couldn't understand why he would cry. He wouldn't answer my question, but he told me that he has to do something terrible, and that he was sorry. I told him he didn't have to do anything he didn't want to. I reminded him that the only book he had to answer to was the one of our Lord. He kept saying he was sorry, and wouldn't talk about much anything after that. Mother once told me that the Vedicants make deals with the devil. I couldn't believe that about my William. I still can't. I'm going to see him on Sunday after church. I'll talk to him then. We'll figure this out. I know in my heart that William is good. I must believe that, because I love him. Love, Alexandria. Alexandria Sweets fell from the highest tower of Vedicant Mansion on September 21st, 1941. Several witnesses have also confirmed that one other person was on the tower with her, William Vedicant the First. It took me exactly 10 seconds on Google to find out that on September 21st, in 1941, there was a solar eclipse. Another search confirmed that the next one was only a few days from today. I'm not one to draw hasty conclusions. I've never been that person. But it's too much of a coincidence. Missing girls, a solar eclipse, and a few desperate Vedicants. Even the book that Alexandria Sweets mentioned in her last journal entry, that was familiar. She was talking about the grimoire. Maybe if I was looking for evidence to back up everything Ethan had told me, this was it. In the midst of a history of violence and darkness. From the beginning, I've been searching for an ending to this story that my grandfather started telling. But I never bothered to ask or wonder why it was this particular town that he was interested in. He didn't grow up anywhere near Crimson Hill. He'd never even been to Virginia before. So how did he end up dying here, trying to tell a story that's more entwined with fantastical conspiracy than I could have ever predicted, than I could have ever imagined? What did he know? And what was I missing? Untold is written and produced by Maisha Razek, intro and theme music by Ross Bugden. This episode featured guest voices Colton Coates and Rakaya Barre. If you like what you've been hearing, don't hesitate to subscribe or follow the podcast and support us at anchor.fm/untoldpod.